Well, once again, it's time. I'm AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and this is the Weimar Technical Mess. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m., by hook or by crook. The Selden-Glen Oaks link is a little wacky, so people hearing me on the Selden repeater might not be hearing quite the dulcet tones as per usual, so I hope you could tolerate the questionable signal that you're getting at Selden. It will be addressed, it will be repaired, it will be fixed. Our crack crew of repeater tech guys are going to fix it. So that in mind, let me drop for a second and I will give you the usual link. Okay, as per always, if you need to contact me, you can't do it on the radio, then email is a great idea. That would be either for mailbag questions. In the old days we used to do that, where you couldn't communicate to the repeater, and so you emailed your technical questions, and they were addressed. Or if you have a topic that you would like to discuss, or you would like to hear discussed, or you would like to interact and discuss it, that's an option. Another thing is puzzles. We're always looking for technical puzzles that allow us to explain interesting aspects of our hobby and science in general. Also, if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to comment about a NASA or space-related article, the email to reach me is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. And, of course, you can go direct to Paul. Just send it off to spacenetreport@gmail.com. In addition, I have a link page with all kinds of interesting YouTubes and articles, science articles, all kinds of useful stuff. It's available 24/7. I don't take it down. So if you just type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, you can see this Sunday's list as well as the previous lists in the past. And also, we have a chat room available. So if you go to Weimar's own page, you'll find the link for the chat room. Or if you want to go direct, just type into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. I also stream this on the internet. So if for some reason you're out of radio range and you can't log on to Echolink, then you could type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com. And that will bring you the audio stream. And I always like to remind people of Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive of the technical mess going back to September of 2006. His site is amateurradio.tv. He has over 1 million visitors, so avail yourself of the archives of this technical mess going back to many years with very smart people giving us a lot of information that we learned from. It's recorded. Some of them are unfortunately silent keys, so they're not sharing their knowledge with us any other way than through these audio archives. So consider looking around and playing some of them. Let me drop for a second and I'll tell you my plan. Okay, it's going to be life as usual. This is our post-Christmas edition of the Weimar Technical Mess. I will ask for questions of a technical nature. Hopefully the first few people will have questions of amateur radio related questions. We will cover other questions, but I'd rather if we kind of bunch up the amateur radio type questions early. I'll ask people to give me their first name and call sign and write down the list, and we'll try and do it in an orderly fashion. If you don't want to wait a long time for your question to be answered, try and get higher on the list. You know, some people remember they have a question 15 or 20 minutes after this all begins, and they put their name on the list, and by the time we get to their name, it's an hour later, and they've distracted and moved on to something entirely different. So, with that all in mind, I will let it drop for a second, and if anyone has any questions of a technical nature, hopefully amateur radio related, please key up and give me your first name and your call sign.
K2GJE, Ed. Roy, you have a lot of noise on your signal. I'm not sure if it's you or the repeater. This is KD2UDU.
Yeah, Wayne, I don't think it's me. The link, my guess is you're listening through the Selden repeater. The link from Glen Oaks to Selden is not working very well in one direction.
K2GJE, Ed back.
Yes, Ed recognized you're on the top of the list. I assume we're going to talk about your task bar. Hopefully people will come up with a good solution for your problem. I'm just wondering if there's anyone else who wants to put their name down for any questions or topics tonight.
K2STP.
Okay, Chris recognized. Anyone else want to put their name down on the list before we begin the show? Okay, Ed, how's your task bar?
K2GJE, okay. Somebody asked if I could make it larger. Yes, I could make it larger, so the mouse must be working using the left click. I can't make it smaller than what I want it to be, over.
Okay, I mean, I'll give an opportunity. Chris knows his computers, Lou knows his computers. My guess is if you can't resize it smaller, something must have set it to a large icon size. So, again, my suggestion would have been, having not looked at XP in probably about 10 years, if you go into the taskbar area and if you right-click and select taskbar properties, it probably has a setting for the icon size. And if you set it to small, it'll shrink down the taskbar. But if Lou or Chris or anyone else out there has any words of wisdom, please feel free to tee up.
K2STP.
WB2KWC.
Can recognize as well. Chris, you want to make a comment?
Yeah, one thing you could try, there may be, you might have something double stacked on the bar. So in other words, like for example, your folder icon and Outlook, or the Internet Explorer and Outlook, and one is stacked on top of each other, so it's requiring two lines, so it won't let you shrink it. And if that's the case, just drag one of those icons and move it so you only have a single row of icons, and then drag the bar. That's just a possibility, one possible.
Okay, that's an interesting one. I didn't recall that you could actually arrange icons on the taskbar on XP. I thought they just kind of lined up, and when they overflowed, they would go down to the second position. But again, it's been a long time. Ken, do you have any words of wisdom for Ed, who's having problems with his XP taskbar?
Okay, I'm in the process of bringing up an XP system. I know one of the things on the later versions of Windows, and I'm not sure if it's on XP, if you'll right-click it, there may be an item that says lock the taskbar, which prevents any changes to it, prevents you from moving it, resizing it, and all that stuff. If there's a check next to that, click on it and uncheck it and see if you can modify the taskbar that way.
Okay, that's an idea, Ken, except that Ed said that he could extend it. So I don't think it's locked because he can increase its width. He just can't decrease its width back to its normal size. It seems to be twice as wide as it used to be.
Okay. Do you mean twice as wide? Well, I guess wide, I'm assuming when you say wide, you're talking about the vertical dimension.
Correct.
Yes, as Ed mentioned, correct. He has his taskbar, I think, at the bottom of his screen at this point. But it's twice as wide, it's twice as thick, however you want to describe it. It's as though someone set the icon on the taskbar to large, I guess. Unless it's double stacked, as Chris mentioned, the possibility.
Okay. Okay. Okay, I'm bringing up a Windows XP system, and I'm playing with it. It does have a lock the taskbar item. Make sure there's no check mark next to that.
K2GJ, yes, the taskbar is unlocked. And on the right-hand side, there are some icons double-stacked. How do I unstack that? Over.
Have you tried just dragging the icons, you know, into position?
That would be the next thing to try. I think they just stay there. They just tell me what they are. Over.
K2STP.
Yes, Chris.
Okay, similarly to how you are right-clicking on the main part of the bar in the area where you want it to shrink down, try right-clicking on the right-hand side of the bar where the cock is and all the little tiny icons for system type stuff. It's called the system tray area. Right-click on that, and there are a whole bunch of menu items that are a little bit separate than the regular taskbar option, and there might be an option, I can't remember in XP exactly what the options are, but maybe there's something in there to unstack them or something like that. K2STP.
K2GJ, okay, I have to run up. I'm going to try and drag those icons onto the bar and see what happens. Over.
Okay, as always, Google is our friend. I've been Googling it. But Google doesn't really like me asking questions about XP. It keeps on wanting to offer me advice on Windows 10, 11, and even 7. It really doesn't like XP.
WB2KWC?
Yes, Cap.
Okay, I've been playing with my XP system. If icons are double stacked, if you look at the taskbar closely, there will be a vertical line. It's almost like a dotted line, and if you move that over to the right, they will rearrange themselves so that they are no longer double-stacked. I'm wondering if, once they're not double-stacked, if you can resize it.
Well, we'll find out from Ed. I would assume that if you do that, it might just auto-correct, because right now it's confused. It set the icons to the proper size, but it stacked them two on top, one on top of each other, so that kind of demands it be twice as thick. So once you position all the icons back onto the same level, I would think it's smart enough to shrink down to the lower width, but we'll see from Ed.
KD2YKH, can I get a radio check trying a 5-watt handheld with a mobile antenna and a little window in Brooklyn?
Yes, certainly. You are approximately 50% noisy. Which repeater are you coming in from, Glen Oaks or Selden?
146, 815.
Okay, that's Glen Oaks. So about 40% noise.
Copy, thank you. Yeah, I'm trying on a 5-watt handheld. I have a mobile antenna with some gain, just trying to mess around with a different location. Thank you for the feedback, KD2YKH.
You're welcome. This is AC2GS, and this is the Limar Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 o'clock for technical questions and such. Right now, we're investigating a taskbar question about Windows XP. And I hope that Ed has a radio upstairs. I get the sense that the radio's in one room and the XP machine is in a completely different room.
K2STP.
Yes, Chris.
So if it's any help to him, I don't know if he can still hear us. I don't think so. But anyway, I know the cause of it. When he dragged, before you started the TechNet, as you know, he asked us this question, and he said he dragged the taskbar to the side, right or left, I can't remember, and he probably had too many icons or tasks running to fit up and down vertically on the bar, so they double stacked, and when he dragged it back, they stayed double stacked. So he just has to unstack them, and that will do the trick. K2STP.
Okay, makes sense, but you would sort of think that even XP would be smart enough to reposition the taskbar icons when it got more room, but, you know, XP. But at the very least, you should be able to drag it if it doesn't have its own... maybe it's as simple as right-clicking and selecting something like refresh?
I don't recall anything like that there. I know there are some stacking options to stack them or unstack them in XP. However, I mean, XP was not that sophisticated. I mean, XP had a lot of issues. I probably wasn't smart enough to unstack them unless you manually do them. But you can drag them or do it the way Ken did, drag the frame that's around the task. Each task has a frame around it. You can drag that or the actual task. You should be able to move them on the bar.
Okay, as far as I could recall, Ed said that he tried to drag the icons from the taskbar and they weren't moving, but I don't know, maybe there's some magic to that. It has been so long since I even thought of XP. You know, I mean, Jesus, so much has come since then. You know, I got two out of three of my computers running on 11. I have a IBM ThinkPad type of computer that still isn't quite ready for 11, so it's running 10. It's a decent operating system for anyone out there. It's more cosmetics as far as I'm concerned. It's slightly prettier. I don't find it being terribly faster or having any particular great features. As a matter of fact, it breaks a few features, but I think they're planning to return them to OS 11 when they get around to them.
BG2R1.
Yes, David.
Hello, Roy. Good evening. My question is, you're talking about Windows 11. Is that trying to make it look like a Mac system 11?
Well, yeah, of course. That's what they always do. You know, they always kind of have lame-brain ideas at Microsoft, and they fail, and people hate them. And so they then turn to other companies and try and steal IP or borrow IP. So they've made the taskbar default into a center position, much like the Mac OS does. But you can drag it back to the left-hand side, which is what I did, so that it looks the same as before. But yeah, they've made it a little bit more Apple operating system than Windows in this iteration.
Tell me, Roy, if you have System 11 and the software you want to run is, I'm sorry, System 11, Windows 11, you have Windows 11 and the software you want to run is Windows 10, would there be any issue with that? And just saying that because I think I want to buy a inexpensive laptop Windows 10. And the reason is, you know, all the ham radio software that I would use is Windows 10.
Well, there have been pieces of software that didn't quite work right when I shifted from 10 to 11, and then I just updated to the most recent form, and it worked fine. I have other software that's kind of ancient, and it's operating perfectly fine. And in addition, Windows offers you the option of launching software in compatibility mode. So there's you can bring up the properties with the icon, and you can select to bring it up in Windows 7 or Windows XP compatibility mode. I haven't had a big problem personally. I guess it has to do with what kind of software and how old it is. There are guys working with software that only work with XPs, and they have computers that still have RS-232 interfaces in the back of their chassis. So for them, it would be a different situation. But I've found that Windows 11 doesn't break too many things, thankfully.
QSL. Yeah, I think to get Windows 11, you probably would, most probably would have to get a new computer. So maybe Windows 10, I can get a used, refurbished computer for a few coins.
Well, at least initially, Microsoft works in mysterious ways, and they decided that they wanted to make 11 a very secure box. And so they've instituted requirements that kind of limit your upscaling from 10 to 11 problematic. If you don't have the proper security circuit inside your motherboard, it won't allow you to upgrade it. If you've disabled Secure Boot, you have to re-enable Secure Boot in order to install it. If you're getting an old used 10, you might as well just keep it on 10. Like I said before, there's no amazing advantage to having 11. I feel that if I stay with the latest, greatest, most of the new drivers will be tested more on 11 than on 10. So that's the only reason I upgraded mine. But I see no problem with using a Windows 10-based system for the foreseeable future. I forget when Microsoft threatened to stop updating the operating system of 10 to fix leaky drivers and such, but it'll probably be fine for the next 3-4 years.
QSL. Well, you know, there are some ham radio software packages. They no longer operate on Windows 7. And I know I can get a really inexpensive computer, Windows 7, but, you know, since some of the software packages, they don't work on Windows 7, then I have to get Windows 10. Even Windows 8.1 would be okay.
AC2GS. I have not been a fan of Windows 8 and, you know, the 8.1, it's like putting lipstick on a pig, unfortunately. Windows 10 I found it to be really stable and a really useful operating system. 7 is a bit long in the tooth at this point, and Microsoft is just not going to fix it if it breaks or someone finds a hack into it. So I would not consider it at this point a secure system any longer. I would go with a Windows 10. I don't think it adds any particular price to it because, you know, theoretically, you can upgrade a Windows 7 computer, you could, to a Windows 10 for free. You know, they kind of let people do that forever and ever without telling anyone. Some people were foolish enough to buy Windows 10 licenses on eBay, and they got took for money, but that's another story. I think 10 is a nice, stable, long-term operating system. 7 has more problems. You'll have, you know, newer software just isn't written for 7 anymore.
QSL. Well, I had a bigger hard drive. At one time, I was trying out a computer, and I was able to partition the hard drive and install a virtual Windows 10 in my Mac. But I had problems with the COM ports, and the COM ports didn't work. And maybe I needed some kind of driver or whatever. And then, you know, when I confronted Yaesu and BridgeCom and some other company, they said these softwares were not meant to be run on Mac. And so, you know, you have to get a Windows operating system. So now here I am trying to figure out, like, what to do.
Well, you know, if you really want to have a Windows, you know, you could make it a dual boot system. When you're running a virtual operating system on top of another operating system, it's very easy for the drivers not to work because they're not really built for that. You know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So, you know, the last type of thing to do is run virtual servers and then have emulation software running in them. I would, if you really wanted to try a dual boot system on your Mac, because up until recently they were the same CPU, the motherboards were pretty much the same. But if you go in through a virtual layer, you know, you're asking for problems. But, you know, it's easy to just buy a relatively inexpensive refurbished old computer that's running 10. You can get them for a couple $100 and just kind of dedicate it to that software and not foul up your Macintosh.
QSL, QSL, KG2RY. Yeah. Yaesu and BridgeCom both said that, you know, their software is not meant to run on a Mac. Say, period, no Mac. So there were people who were talking about this emulating on the virtual system. And they were talking about it, but I don't think anybody really succeeded to make it work. And yes, I did look at some laptops, you know, very reasonably priced. I was just a little bit concerned about the operating system. If I'm getting a factory or a seller refurbished item, does that mean that the operating system is 100% legit?
Well, unfortunately, it's ultimately up to the people who manufacture it, whether they have a proper license or not. I have never heard of anyone getting into trouble with a license. If it activates, it kind of activates. I have never heard a story where Microsoft contacts you later and say, we just discovered that you have a pirated copy, we're going to shut it down. The only thing that you'll find is with an OEM version of the software, you can't transfer it to any other machine. So it's kind of locked in to the motherboard of that particular computer. So if you were to swap, you know, 60% or 70% of the components in that computer, and the computer couldn't recognize itself as being the same computer, it is theoretically possible that it will lose its license. But short of that, you're not going to have a problem.
Thanks. You're saying basically that if Windows 10 is running on that specific, the machine that I want to buy, if the Windows 10 is running on it, then, you know, it somehow, it is okay for that machine?
Well, the test is not exactly that it's running on it. The test is that it activates. So basically, if you buy the unit and turn it on, and it says, "Would you like to activate this copy of Windows?" and you say yes, and you go through the simple things, and it says, "Okay, you're registered," then you're in like Flint. If it says, "Would you like to register?" and you enter all the information, and it says error, cannot connect, you know, or some weird thing, then, you know, you should buy it from some company where if it just doesn't work, you can take it back. But once you register it, you're in. I again, don't know of anyone who ever had something be unregistered with the Windows operating system.
Yeah, so I have to either find out if it is already activated or they accept return.
AC2GS. Well, that's always a good practice. Because, you know, it's money. So if it doesn't work when you take it out of the box, you want to be able to bring it back at least. My guess is unless you're buying someone else's functioning computer just used, where he activated it, and then it'll just still be activated. But if it's a repurposed type of situation, then most likely it hasn't been activated yet, because you know Microsoft would like to personally activate it under your name, not a company name.
Bravo Zulu.
Yes, Rich.
Two things, Roy. David's signal is much cleaner than yours. He goes from about, you know, full quieting to about, I don't know, 20% noise, where a lot of your signal is around, I would say, 60% noise, at least from this side of Selden. So just wanted to say that. And the other thing is that whenever you get a manufacturer's refurb, they have to go through tests that they don't necessarily look for manufacturing refurbs, because I know that they, by law, they have to look at those machines more extensively than new ones. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, but also it depends upon the manufacturer. I'm sure there are more obsessive compulsive manufacturers than others. And as far as my signal, I boosted it up high, but I think the primary problem on your end is that the link connecting Glen Oaks and Selden is kind of iffy. It goes in, out, and sideways. So I could be throwing my usual 150 watts before they fix the antenna, and you probably would still have problems with my signal.
Then I would wonder why David's signal is cleaner than yours, because he's going into Glen Oaks too, right?
I would assume so, but again, the link is kind of erratic, so it might be a temporal type of problem as opposed to a geographic one.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
Yeah, I just have to make sure that the vendor has a good rating, that the software is activated, and that they accept returns. If it's not activated, then they have to accept returns. They don't accept returns, I'm not buying.
This time, David isn't even holding the machine.
Okay, so that's what I kind of told you, Rich. It's not location or power. It's simply random time intervals. Sometimes the link's a little bit better. Sometimes the link's a little bit worse. But getting back to you, David. Well, as I said before, my guess is that out of the box, unless it's just used and not, not gone through the system, it's not going to come to you activated. It's going to come to you operational and offering to activate it. One of the first steps that you should really do is activate it. You know, write down your name, address, what have you. And if the activation works, great. If the activation doesn't work, you pack it up, you take it back, and you ask for your money back or a replacement.
QSL, QSL. But it isn't clear, you know, what information they want. Maybe they want a serial number. I don't know.
It depends upon what kind of operating system version. There's OEM and there's retail. If it's retail, they're going to ask for the number. Usually if it's OEM, the OEM have imprinted the magic number already inside the computer, and all it wants to know is your name and location and other little bits and pieces. So it shouldn't be a problem. If it requires the special activation code, usually it's on a sticker attached to some portion of the computer.
QSL, thanks a lot. Yeah, I guess the idea is, you know, if is to get this thing to work and, you know, make it legit to say OEM is OEM is from refurbished sellers.
OEM is original equipment manufacturer, so it's refurbished and new. The only time you should really interact with a retail copy of the operating system is if you're building your own system, or if you're buying a copy to upgrade an old system for some reason. That's the only time it's retail. Otherwise, if you buy a manufactured or you buy a refurbished from a legitimate company, they're all OEM.
Well, you know, it's funny. This makes me think of, you know, when I was partitioning the Macintosh hard drive for virtual Windows. And, you know, part of that process, I had to download a copy of Windows 10, you know, and then I had to use the Mac software to install it.
Yes.
Yeah, I had to use a version of Windows 10 that I downloaded for free. And so I'm wondering, like, you know, even though Windows 10 is an old operating system, are they still, like, how to say, they still have a security for it?
Well, yeah, you know, once they got to Windows 10 and such, it became very iffy because there is registration and there is security, but Microsoft decided to treat it almost like razors versus the razor blades. They give away the razors for free. So it's kind of difficult to actually spend money on operating systems with Microsoft. People have been known to do it, unfortunately, on eBay and other places. And you can go on Amazon and buy a retail copy of Windows 11. You can't get, it's a little bit more difficult. There's fewer and fewer legal ways of getting a copy of Windows 10 because Microsoft is not promoting Windows 10 anymore. So that's going to be a bigger problem. But I don't know of anyone who's really had terrible registration problems. And again, I haven't spent any money on operating systems once I buy the computer. Microsoft operating system upgrades have all been kind of freebies. So I don't know how heavy their regulations are. I wouldn't expect them to screw around with you that way because it's just not cost effective for anyone but a complete thief to do things like that.
Thanks, Roy. KG2RY. Well, you know, it's like the Macintosh computer. You know, they give you the new operating system, Windows 11, the new operating Mac with the 5-speed peripherals to connect, and all the basic things that you need, and choice between i5, i7, i9 processor, and newer operating system from an older computer, but if it's really old, you can't upgrade. So you get a new computer, and you have to install everything, and you have to migrate everything. And they really make it very, attractive. You want a new computer with a new operating system in it.
Well, Well, yeah, I mean, Apple always has that magic. It has people buying new cell phones every year. It has them upgrading their computers. And giving away the operating system was another great idea that Microsoft stole, which I'm happy with. You know, I'd rather not pay extra for incremental operating systems. You know, I'm sort of glad that Microsoft isn't in a position, as Apple is, to change chipsets, because I would have gotten very upset if all of a sudden all future software development worked on an M1 chip instead of a instead of my old Intel chip.
QSL. Well, my Macintosh computer, it's almost 10 years old, 9 years old. It had one repair since I bought it, you know? It has a system software 10.15.7, and the security updates, I'd say pretty frequently, so they're still supporting this version of the software.
Apple's a little bit easier on people, but again, then you have to deal with the ramifications of changing chipsets, and they've done it repeatedly. You know, there were guys who were very happy with their 68,000 series Motorola chipsets, and then they moved to Intel, and now they're moving to their own foundries. And, I guess eventually, if they're doing it all in-house, they're not going to take it outside anymore, but who knows with Apple. And someone made a comment someplace that they weren't able to hear the echo link. It was very, very noisy, so sorry for that. Again, it has to do with the interactions of the link between Glen Oaks and Selden. So if they're hearing it on something else, that's the reason why. Yes, Wesley?
Can you put me on next, as the next in line, about the antenna?
Okay, we still have to go back to Ed, hopefully, because we've kind of lost touch with him and we kind of rambled off. And Chris, K2STP, signed in earlier. So you're third on the list, okay?
Okay.
Motorola G4, the old style computer. Just need to get a monitor and a keyboard.
Okay, I mean, if you want to use the old software and such, you could use the old CPU, but if you want the new stuff, I'm sure some guy at Apple is going to write virtual software to try and get it, get M1 coded stuff to work on i7s and i7 stuff to work on M1s, but it's not going to be as good as if you natively run on the architecture, on the hardware.
I want to get an M1 computer, 27-inch iMac. They're definitely going to do it in time. Right now they have 24-inch iMac with M1, and then I think the next thing will be 27-inch iMac with M1.
Well, it's very possible. It depends on their marketing division, how many SKUs they way back when I think Jobs took over control, there were a lot of different models of Mac computers, and one of the first things that he did, other than kill the contracts with third-party clones, was to shrink the number of various models available, because, you know, it adds an additional cost to manufacturing and such. So, yeah, it's going to depend upon the marketers of what they think they could sell a lot of.
QSL, But, you know, as the technology progresses along, you know, and you've got a good technology, something that really works, and it's proven, you know, through the testing and whatever, you know, people like it a lot, you know, then it progresses to something more advanced and something bigger, and maybe there'll be an M1 for the 27-inch, maybe there'll be something better, and also the cheese grater, the one that looks like a cheese grater, the Mac Pro, and that also, like an M1 type, to say many cores in one chip processor for Mac Pro.
Yeah, I'm sure that they have a lot of things that they're working on. I heard a rumor that they're working on a high-end a display screen that's not the ridiculous price that they're charging for the graders monitor. If you remember, I don't remember how much the monitor cost. It was something ridiculous like $5,000 or $10,000. I do remember that the actual stand for the monitor costs $1,000. That's incredibly ridiculous.
Well, someone at the Apple store told me that they wanted to make a computer that would be good for 10, 20 years. You know, you could upgrade the RAM, you could upgrade certain other things. You know, most of those things you would need over time, you know. And I guess that was their idea, you know. The other thing was, years ago, there was this computer that did retouching and also real-time video for professional video editing. It was called the Silicon Graphics Indigo, Silicon Graphics. And I guess the idea was Apple wants to make some less expensive computers that could do all the things that they did, you know, for the abilities of computers today, you know, as opposed, you know, compared to back then, the Silicon Graphics Indigo, 1992-93, something like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, those models were specialized for companies, for people who had an unlimited bank account and, you know, were doing the 3D graphics for Hollywood and could charge a great deal of money. So, if you spent $30,000 or $40,000 on a computer and you took it as a tax loss if you didn't make enough profit, then that's a different world entirely. So I think that's what Apple was doing. They were trying to give you the ultra high-end, high price tag for guys who either just have too much money or they are part of a business that can kind of, through creative tax accounting, can either make a profit off of it or use it as a tax loss of some kind. But I don't think it sells that many. Unfortunately, Apple doesn't really release those types of information readily, so we'll sort of never know. But for anyone who isn't a multimillionaire or doesn't own a major company, I don't think anyone even looks at that as an option at all.
QSL. But the price of today's Mac Pro is much less compared to the Silicon Graphics Indigo set up with an editing software, real-time animation and effects for professional TV editing. Someone told me that the machine inside of one editing studio was $750,000. He didn't tell me how much the software was. I knew another person who had an Indigo, not as capable. The cost for Photoshop was $5,000, just the software.
Well, I don't think the software was particularly that special. I think they were writing it for a console device designed for professionals with professional budgets and such. And some silicon is very, very expensive. Most people's kids and grandkids are very familiar with the state-of-the-art graphic acceleration cards available now. Pretty much NVIDIA kind of took over the field with the 3080 and the 3090, and those go for ridiculous amounts of money. But again, these are consumer models. They also sell professional with more cores and much more dollars necessary. So you can buy silicon that costs thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. So that, you know, it's not only the companies just taking the cream off the top, but they're investing in a lot of more productive hardware that would be excessive for you or me. But if you're generating a lot of frames of high resolution 3D with all kinds of shaders and customization and such, you know, if you can scrape 10, 15 minutes off of generating a file, it's you can do more work in less time and save yourself some money. So it's a different market entirely, these high-end animation equipment. They're slowly blurring the edges between the two, but there are still really expensive professional silicon boards out there that most of the public doesn't really stay aware of because it's out of our price range.
QSL, Roy. I just want to tell you, years ago, the early 90s, I was playing around with a computer programs for imaging, Photoshop and Illustrator, right, other ones, and went in between all of them. My teacher, he calls himself the father of computer art. 1977, he built a computer that took up an entire room, and it was connected to just a color CRT TV screen. And what he did was he photographed it with a camera and transparency film, and then made Cibachrome, vintage Cibachrome, from those pictures. And that was a computer art that he made.
Okay, I mean, there was all kinds of early creativity going around. I don't know what chipset. I guess it was the 8008, if it was any kind of microcomputer. There were guys who just kind of figured out the different CPU operations that caused heterodyning to a regular radio's oscillator and played music from a very, very early microcomputer. There was a lot of work in graphics. Eric used to mention that some of the early programmers who were involved in eventually Photoshop were working on computer graphics in a school. He was, I think it was Brooklyn College or Brooklyn Tech or something. So yeah, there was a lot of early development, and you know, we all stand on the shoulders of giants.
Well, this teacher of mine, he said that he thought that Photoshop 4 was more useful and better for him than Photoshop 7. The upgrade for him was kind of, how to say, he didn't find it so useful. And he made his art on, like, old computers with very archaic old software.
Okay, you know, I mean, back then it wasn't that much archaic software yet. You know, graphics was a slow evolutionary trend. When I bought my Amiga, it was amazing to me. It had 4,096 simultaneous colors available on its screen. Up until then, if you dealt in the Windows world, you were stuck with VGA standards of 256 colors, and there was no real bitmapping. You had bitmap characters, and so you had to build an image through the character matrix of early Windows 3.1 and such. So things have gotten incredible. You know, nowadays you could run real-time 3D simulations. You can link it to a visual image of yourself and have avatars move around and be an actor in your own little cartoons of differing visual realism. If you got the time and you got the silicon, it's just a matter of having the motivation.
QSL, QSL. But now, today, if I want the Adobe Photoshop, I don't know what the number is on it, just Adobe Photoshop CC and Lightroom Classic, those two programs, you know, and I have to pay rent to Adobe to keep them running on my computer.
Yes, it's a subscription service. I subscribe to it. It's a toy for me. For professionals, it's a job, so it makes more sense for them. But just the other night, I played around with the new neural filters for colorization and such. I wanted to demonstrate it for someone who had some black and white images, and I love to play with all those things. I have the whole Adobe collection. It has the Character Studio, where you can actually, as I mentioned before, you can build avatars and you can move them around and lip sync them. It's fascinating to see all of this technology available. But yeah, Adobe is tough. Adobe decided that they want a lot of money and they went into the subscription business. Different companies go in and out of that type of a business. Microsoft did that with Office, and now they're offering a non-subscription version as well, so I'm not quite sure where they're going. But subscription services are very popular with manufacturers because it makes them a lot of money.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, I subscribe only to a couple of programs because I'm able to get most of the other stuff for free, or at least it's old software from like a couple of years ago, Pine and Live and BB Edit and DaVinci Resolve. And then, you know, what comes with the computer and the ham radio software that works on the Mac, and a clock that allows me to get UTC, so when I'm on the air, I can see what time it is, and I can go on to the web browser and do a QRZ on the person I'm talking to.
Yeah, thankfully there's a lot of software that's free. DaVinci Resolve, I still find amazing. It is not an old piece of software. It is not a discontinued piece of software. It will not give you the ultra, ultra high resolutions that most of the average people don't really need that much anyway. So as long as you don't need that, the company gives it to you for free. It takes a while to download because it's a lot of software. But it's incredibly powerful. It also requires a little bit of practice to figure out how to use. It's not very simple. It's not like Microsoft Word, where you just type the words in and select the fonts and such. But, you know, it's a very powerful device. So there's a lot of that out there. So I'm always very, very glad to see people who are creating freeware and shareware and all that stuff and don't really want or need to be supported. When they have a place that you could donate money, I throw a couple of bucks through PayPal to them.
QSL, QSL. it's a good program. I think you can edit in a minimal 4K resolution. My monitor, I think, is like 255018 something, whatever. It is, so it's 2.5K, 2.5K, and it's really easy on my eyes. So, you know, I really do like it. And